cases under that. They looked at the language, which I think is one of the things that your officers are facing, is how does a judge determine what is unreasonably loud? How does he determine if the language is not very specific? So, like, there were cases where they have found certain language that is specific enough under their standards. So if I were going to go without the decimal level, I would look to the cases to pull some of the language that they have specifically approved. Unfortunately, some of them are a little contradictory. For instance, Dorsett said loud and unnecessary is not too vague, but unnecessary is too vague in Smith. So it still kind of gives you a hard time in figuring out exactly what would be okay. And I think a judge sitting here in Transylvania County would have a hard time deciding, was it unnecessary? Was it too loud from those standards? The courts have consistently allowed them to say that if it was audible from a certain distance, you know, set this as 50 feet, whatever you want to set it at, that is, that's not vague. It's not sufficiently vague. You can do it that way. And if you don't have a decimal level, that's one of the ways that I have very consistently done. The other part of that in doing it that was classified under that, more under the overbroad part of it, the second way that they were doing it was, again, the content neutral part of it. So if you are restricting noise, you cannot exempt out certain categories. Unless they're very closely tied to those government needs, like an emergency siren that's needed for the safety of the person. Examples of that was, they had a case called Catalana where the amplified sound at a distance from the motor vehicle, I don't remember the exact distance, 50 feet or whatever, was not allowed unless it was a political vehicle or a commercial vehicle. And the court said, you simply cannot do that. It's invalid. So that's one of the things you're going to have to watch when you're drawing and exempting certain types of music or certain types of other things like that, that you don't, that is content neutral. It's based on the noise and what the noise is doing, not what the noise is saying. And you need to make sure also that the measurements are taken off the property of the person. There are cases that say you cannot take it on the property. And also, there are cases that have turned it over because the measurement was taken at the property line. But the decimal level was such that basically you could be talking in a normal voice on your property and not exceed it. I mean, exceed the violate the noise ordinance. So you can't. It has to be loud noise, it has to be annoying, it has to be, if it's going to prohibit ordinary speech, you simply can't do it. So, those are the basic main legal challenges that you've seen outside. I think at the local level, you're going to see challenges a lot to whether or not the officer properly took the sound, whether there was other sound, that sort of thing, if you do the decimal. When it goes up to the appellate level, you're going to see more challenges to the First Amendment. Obviously, they have to preserve those at the local level. Yes?
Misty, years ago, when municipalities used to have a noise ordinance against straight pipes and no mufflers and so forth like that, mm-hmm. What did they depend on for their officers? And I'm thinking about the city of Asheville years ago when they had a noise ordinance about straight pipes instead of mufflers and inside the city limits. They had to base that on something. What did they use?
I'm sure they were just using the same noise standards. I'm not familiar with that particular ordinance, but there are a lot of different types of ordinances. They're coming under animal control. They're coming under modifications to vehicles that are making the vehicle louder than normal. They're coming under just straight noise ordinance regulations. So there are a lot of different types of ways that sound have been regulated.
Now, the reason I asked that is because I was thinking about, you talked about logistical concerns, environmental factors, weather, wind, temperature, and all that.
Will affect the decibel reading, yes.
Affect the transmission of sound.
And that is one of the things that you will see, one of the types of challenges. Like I said, it's not easy in a courtroom, because that's the things that a good defense lawyer is going to challenge.
People downwind are going to catch it, and people upwind, well, they're going to be okay with the sound, probably.
Well, and even the, you know, I was thinking in terms of the audible from 50 feet or whatever, but I was sitting there thinking, well, what's audible to me from 50 feet, and what's audible to my husband from 50 feet, and what's audible to my son from 50 feet is going to be vastly different. But the courts have, you know, upheld that. I mean, it doesn't have to be absolute. But yeah, that what you're addressing, though, is part of the standards and part of the training that the officer has to undergo, is how to take that into account. From what I've read about, I didn't go too detail into what is needed, but that was one of the areas that they addressed in terms of being able to get an accurate reading.
See, what I'm thinking about on the noise ordinance in this county, the perfect example I still have to go back to is the racetrack issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the racetrack didn't bother a lot of people, but other people, I mean, it drove them nuts. And a lot of it was relative to the lay of the land in the valley and how the sound traveled and so forth. I mean,
I think that's where the decimal readings actually may come more into play, where you have a fairly consistent, what is the decimal reading here and there?
Or maybe an average of readings taken at different places to see if it exceeds the limit. Have a chance to review the county's existing
position. I've looked over it.
Do you think our exemptions that we have would...
I have concerns with a couple of them. Well, I have concerns with exempting military music. And I have to get the ordinance out to take a look at it. I think it's content-based. I mean, I think the court, if that was challenged, would take a look to determine why is military music more annoying, less annoying, or less...
Because we're patriotic.
I think that's a content-based, unless you can tie it back to a specific safety or health concern or regulation concern that you have here in the county. I'm not sure that's going to stand constitutional muster.
But it was only a temporary intermittent use. In other words, 4th of July, you know, patriotic bands or something like that.
So can an anti-patriotic person play their music, anti-U.S. music, on the 4th of July real loud?
Oh, wait.
See, that's where they're getting into the First Amendment concerns, the freedom of speech. And that's where the big challenges are coming under the noise ordinance. And they do classify things as speech that you would not think of as speech. So all kinds of sound, dance, other things.
What about exempting construction and lawn maintenance?
Yeah, that was the other one that I wasn't sure about. There are a lot of them that have exempted that type of work, though. And there is clearly a thing in terms of drawing it as narrowly as possible. I think that one's more close, is going to be closer for us. Because the courts have said it's okay to look at, say, an industrial area. You might have a where there's not people that sleep at night. It may have different standards for that area in a commercial area, and you may actually be required to do that to draw it as narrowly as possible. So, but I'm a little concerned, and I can't remember, like, why the construction vehicle may necessarily be different than a lawnmower or other personal vehicle. I think that was one of the other ones that I wasn't completely...
You didn't have any...
Well, I had a problem with the lawnmowers on the weekend. I lived in a town that has noise ordinance, and you weren't supposed to mow your lawn before 8 o'clock mm-hmm. on the weekend.
But I don't think, I guess maybe that wasn't the best example, but I guess what I was trying to say is I'm not sure if construction equipment is different than other equipment that might make the same level of noise, whether it would be better suited to be tied to a sound level or not.
And I missed you. A lot of that was based upon the timing of doing certain
right.
aspects of construction work, like trying to pour concrete early in the morning before it gets too hot, you know, where the yeah. concrete can set and all that. Well, you've got this big diesel engine out here running, pumping concrete into a job, probably well before 8 o'clock, sometimes yeah. 7 o'clock in the morning on some of these jobs.
I have less concern about that one than I do the music. I can look into that issue further for you if you'd like me to.
That would be good.
Are there any other parts of the ordinance that you have specific questions about? Or?
You didn't have any concern about the agricultural part, did you?
Being exempting the farms?
Farm machinery and so forth.
I think it's similar to construction, so we just have to take a look at that.
That's another aspect of that, too. If you're in a farm area and there's houses are widely spaced and they do agricultural work early in the morning, on the weekends, whenever, and that's okay, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you...
And that's going to go back to how you draft what is determined to be allowed noise
yeah.
and where you're determining it from. Because if he's got a farm that's large enough that you can't really even hear it off the farm, then it's not going to qualify under anybody's
ears. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the law is pretty clear that you can't make it a violation in that situation. Well, the bar, not a farm, but same thing.
I think that's the issue with exempting construction operations is if you have two houses close together and you take a noise reading at your neighbor's house, it's going to be virtually impossible put a roof on or do remodel work for that. Exceeding all other houses would be obnoxious. Obviously, if you had a neighbor whose house was continuously under construction for 10 years, noise violation. But I mean, that level of noise and aggravation would be an issue.
Yeah. I was asked to look specifically at decibel levels and their inclusion. I haven't looked specifically at. Like whether or not the
exemption,
yeah, the exemption construction
okay.
would hold up, but I can take some closer on that for you.
Okay.
What type of decibel level is common in ordinances? Like if the readings are taken at a neighbor's home?
I have seen huge variances in the decibel levels, and a lot of them I think might be concerning, but. I do know that there are standards that are set out and there are charts that are put out that will tell you approximately what a decimal level is equal to. And I know the EPA did a study that's old now. I don't know if there's a more current one, but it listed out at what level you see hearing damage, at what level, you know, it's annoying. So I would just take a look at the statutes and then compare it to some of those charts as to what it's showing. That means maybe even listen yourself if you wish to risk some damage to your ear. But
well, if you're building a house on an infill lot like is happening here in Brevard, of course we're not, but it's going to be construction noise and no way out of that.
Well, there's going to be noise from any sort of business,
yeah.
And you I don't think you can exempt noise. I mean, you may can. It's time restrictions and those types of things that you can regulate. I don't think you can completely say that they can't make noise.
Well, you know what would be interesting, and I did, the light bulb just came on. Does Lake Toxaway have noise ordinances about what hours people can run motorboats out on the lake?
I don't know if Toxaway has
noise. That would be a question for the HOA.
And see where see how they determined those hours and so forth. Because theoretically, I mean, that's the public water of the United States. You ought to be able to get on there 24 hours a day. But it's in a development, so it's probably under a noise ordinance. Who knows?
Well, a subdivision could have language about noise. Lived in a subdivision that had that.
I mean, it's always a balancing test between your right to engage in activities that you want, your First Amendment right to make noise, music, whatever it happens to be, and other people's rights to private enjoyment, to their ability to sleep at night, and the effects that the noise can take. So you ultimately have to decide where that line is going to be here in Transylvania County.
And I think it's important to remember this: it's a county noise ordinance. It's not a noise ordinance for a single community or a development or subdivision. And those entities would be free to have something more restrictive if they decide to.
I do wonder how many counties have noise ordinances. Do you know?
I know Jackson does. I know Polk chose not to move forward.
I know there's a lot of city noise ordinances, and I know there's quite a few county ordinances.
I don't know the percentage.
Percentages look like.
No.
Would you like to share some of the Sheriff's Department's issues while we have the county attorney here and maybe we could?
Yeah, we talked to Angie before the meeting, so I pretty much expressed our concerns to her. I would like to mention that those Toxaway Homeowners Association does have some probably more restrictive noise regulations than the county does, but you got to remember that they're a homeowners association, and so they're not trying to enforce those criminally. There's actually no way they can enforce them criminally. They might be able to issue them some kind of a citation as a civil penalty that would be payable to the homeowners association, but there's really no recourse legally other than maybe a civil lawsuit that they would have to remedy any of that. So
it talks away as a more restrictive ordinance than what we're looking at here. You guys really can't enforce it up there.
We can't enforce it. No, those would be talked with homeowners association rules and regulations, and not North Carolina criminal law or county ordinances that would be enforceable as a misdemeanor or anything like that. So we couldn't enforce those private homeowners association rules. I will say, over the years, I don't ever remember us getting any kind of a complaint for somebody mowing grass or for farm equipment or for construction or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, primarily, our noise, the two things we get called most on for noise ordinances are barking dogs and loud music. That's our two most popular noise ordinance complaints.
About gunshots.
Well, we get a lot of complaints about guns, but, I mean, the current ordinance we've got addresses that now, and as long as they're doing it in a reasonable hour and in a safe manner, then it's pretty much exempt from the ordinance. So there's really nothing we can do except for make sure that those folks are shooting in a safe manner, in a safe location, and of course, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning is not a reasonable hour, but as long as they're doing it during the daytime, there's not really a lot we can do about that.
I got the impression when it was yourself that spoke to us months ago that you felt that a decibel reader could make the difference between what you heard and the neighbor heard and another deputy heard.
Yes, ma'am. And that's—I mean—I think that was set a standard. And I think the problems that we've experienced trying to prosecute our noise ordinance in court in Transylvania County is the fact that we don't have that standard. And the ordinance is too subjective, so that one officer shows up and thinks, okay, that's loud and obnoxious and unreasonable, and the next officer shows up and says, well, that's not really that loud.
There's no standard. It's all officer opinion, really. And we've lost a few court cases over the years.
And I did ask, because I know you're looking at the same judges here and in Henderson County, both where you have the city of Brevard with a decimal level and Henderson, I guess, has a decimal level. And the people that I spoke to said they were losing across the board when the DA's office on the noise ordinances, and wasn't sure that the inclusion of the decimal level by itself would get you to a criminal conviction, but they did think that it would not hurt, in terms of it would be helpful.
Is it reasonable to think that a one-time occurrence might be an irritation versus an ongoing situation like, again, drug on with the racetrack out there?
I think the officer might have some things he would like to say about that. He's kind of going to a 24-hour wait period.
Yeah, that's part of the thing we're experiencing now with the bars that are open up. I mean, we've got a couple of bars in town, and to attract customers, they hire live music to come in. So those bands come in, and at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, those bands are still playing wide open. And your folks that live in the neighborhoods are complaining, well, here's the thing, if I show up at, it's actually better for them if we show up at 8 o'clock and go ahead and write in that citation, because it's a $200 ticket, and they're probably making $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for that night. But for 24 hours after that citation is written, there's no more law enforcement action that we can take.
So they're just playing the game.
Anybody who's got access to you can go to the internet and pull up the noise ordinance, and anybody can figure that out. So we go out and give them a verbal warning, we go out and we give them a written warning, we issue them a citation. By 9 o'clock, they're home free for 24 hours. They can play all night. And neighbors don't understand that. Well, you wrote them a citation, why can't you come out and arrest them now? We can't.
Well, and I guess in terms of the legal part about it, if you're writing it as a noise ordinance violation, you're saying that it's detrimental to their health, or it's detrimental, it's a nuisance, or it's annoying. And so the question would be, why is it annoying here and not annoying for the next 24 hours? And not annoying for but I guess you could decide that in order to be annoying anyway, if you're not looking at health considerations, if the noise is not so loud to create hearing damage or anything like that, that you could say that in order to be annoying, it has to occur beyond a period of time. That might be very difficult with...
Is that defensible, though? Are most of your complaints like the neighbors that are already on the house with each other? Or are they... is it kind of ongoing people that you're aware of that you're having, that are having issues?
It's kind of a mixture, but I think for the most part, the reason those neighbors are on the outs is because you got one neighbor over here who's constantly causing that excessive noise, and when he finds out that aggravates his neighbor, then he's not more likely to do it more often than not. Especially since I think pretty much everybody in the county knows our noise ordinance we have now really doesn't have any teeth, because our judges have said we've not had a conviction yet on the current noise ordinance. We've had some uncontested folks that just came in and paid their citation, but they were not contested.
The ordinance we've got now says that each day is a separate offense. Can we make the offenses closer together? Can it be every hour? Or
sure.
Y'all can stand there and write them all night.
Well,
well,
I think I'd rather just, I don't know.
Well, we told you an hour ago you had to cool down. You didn't, so here's your other one.
But that would be legal to do that, wouldn't it? If that was in the ordinance.
Yeah,
that's in the ordinance.
You're hitting them in the pocketbook. That hurts.
Let me tell you my barking dog story. I don't see them now. Noticed almost every night it was a barking dog, and it was well away from my house. It must have been almost half a mile, but there were other houses closer to it. And go back there and find out the next dog barking. And my wife said something about it. One night, I said, "Patrick, lying there, a dog was barking." Heard the door slam, a gunshot, The door slammed again, there was no more barking dog.
Yeah, I think that's one of the trying to avoid the bees. Is it escalating to such a level that...
Was that when you were in Florida?
No, that was here.
That was here?
That was here.
Got it. Okay.
No, I was... Part of God is so good in Florida. They come out and talk to you.
I don't understand the 24-hour thing. I mean, if this is something that is causing a nuisance or could conceivably be a health hazard, you don't want, why do you want to wait 24 hours, you know, I mean, and prolong that? I mean, so if you kept me going 75 and a 60, I'm good for 24 hours. I can go speeding for 24 hours. If I get stopped again, hey, I've already got a ticket for speeding.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way.
And I think that's the legal kind of part, because that's what I was trying to say. If it's dangerous or if it's a problem, why is it not a problem if you continue to do it after you got the citation?
Well, yeah, and the point is, if it's a nuisance, then what's the point of having an ordinance if you don't go make the nuisance stop? And somebody says, you know, my neighbor's playing in music or whatever. Okay, well, we've given him a ticket, and he has to stop it by this time tomorrow night. Okay, fine, I can't sleep all night, but thank you.
Or are we going to write him another ticket?
Or maybe the fine.
How many do you write before they, how many times do you go out there before you go to court?
We typically would go out, we give them a verbal note and say, hey, your neighbors are complaining, your neighbors too loud, can you turn it down? And usually they say yeah.
Yeah.
Although, most of the time we end up back there, especially if it's one of these bars. Second time we go out, it's a written warning, so they actually get a written warning. We got some paperwork we fill out. Then the next time we go, they get a citation. So usually the third time they get a citation. Now, I mean, that's not set in stone, but that's kind of... When we got this particular ordinance, that's what the sheriff and some of the administrative folks there got together and said, we need to come up with some kind of system that's fair. That would give the opportunity for an officer to go out and warn somebody and then comply.
Yeah, if they do that, they shouldn't get it.
Yeah.
And it's the same with speeding ticket. I mean, if I catch you at 75 and I think, you know, if I give you a star talking to and that's going to be a problem, I don't have to write you that citation.
Yeah.
The other thing with the noise ordinance is I probably have to do some research on to see if this particular ordinance...
I don't go 75, I'm just saying. I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah, you've never done that.
Right. If some of those ordinances are not arrestable offenses, although there are misdemeanors in some cases, you can only write them a citation, or if there's criminal process, it has to be a criminal summons. You can't arrest them for it. So.
Yeah. Well, if it's something that's this tricky to prosecute, they probably shouldn't be arrested. That's the other thing. If you have something that's iffy and it's difficult to prosecute, I would hate to arrest them.
So if he's choosing to go the criminal route, I think, and again, I will look closer because this is, I'm just going quickly here with you. I believe that the statutes are going to make it a Class 3 misdemeanor. Is that what you're charging? And that the fine for it into the criminal can't exceed $500. Now, if you're going under a civil nuisance, a different way, there are ways to add fines to it, but if you're prosecuting it criminally, not civilly, I think that's where you're going to end up.
Yeah. I know I heard somebody mention the racetrack, I've been Bob.
Yeah.
But when we were dealing with that, I mean, we charged him, he probably got 15, 18, 20 tickets. I don't know how many tickets he got, but he got written several tickets over a period of time. And we had one single conviction out of any of those. Actually, they may have all got kind of combined into one for one big trial. It's kind of how it really works anyway. But I do know that the county won some kind of a lawsuit against him on some civil remedies. And I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but I mean that might be another option. I don't know.
Well, I think going after people under a nuisance statute is going to be an easier and better way. You know, going civilly to shut it down is easier for those kind of recurrent nuisances than criminal, by far. And it's easier to prove because in a criminal, you've got beyond a reasonable doubt, you've got a judge trying to figure out if the person is really committing a criminal act or what their defense is. whereas your nuisance statutes and stuff are very different. Very different, and the burden of proof in the courtroom is quite a bit lower.
Could we, as far as repetitive violations, could it be set up first time? It's like you say, you give a warning, and the third time you finally write a ticket. Well, fifth time, can it be something stronger? Or?
Well, if you're talking about that civil remedy, I think that would be something that the county would have to probably negotiate through an attorney. I mean, that's not something that we can do as law enforcement officers.
Right. You just write the ticket.
We just write the ticket. We would go to court, call it.
The fine this time is $1,000. And that's right. Tenth time is $2,500 or something like that.
I think you could actually do that for me, though, too.
You said most of yours are barking dogs and loud music.
I mean, there's some exceptions. We do have some other things out there that we can flex on, but
the majority of it. How many of those, let's say, in a month did you get? Just a feel for that. 10, 5, none?
I'd say it depends on what time of the year it is.
Okay.
Probably October through February, March. We don't have a lot of visitors here in the mountains. A lot of it comes from when we got all of our visitors here sometime in 4 months. All of our call volumes tends to pick up, and including those noise ordinance calls, those loud noise calls. So for some of that noise that would be going on for somebody who lives here year-round, that person that might be complaining might be in Florida for the winter. So they're just not here to complain. So we definitely got more people here during those 4 months.
Right. So you get more complaints.
Sure.
That makes sense.
So, Joy, what's our next step?
Our next step is to think on what you have heard tonight and come back and do your wordsmithing at the next meeting. And at that time, I will have the model ordinance from the EPA that you guys will have had an opportunity to look at to see what decibel levels they chose back in 1975. And I'll have the list of decibel levels that show hearing damage versus annoyance. Because at this point, we're still gathering information. And so in your packet, I did provide a definition of industry as you all had requested, but we can consider that when we consider all the other wordsmithing that comes into play. And so I would suggest that with the modification of the agenda that we consider what we have heard, get some additional resources, and come back to it. That is what I would suggest. Chair?
And to me, one other thing, it really bothers me that we have an ordinance that's been on the books for 11 years that people have been cited for, and
never won.
And the people that had the means or the knowledge of how to get out of it are able to get out of it, and other folks are not. And to me, that's just really a problem. We need to
Do you say that anybody that's contested it has won? The only people that have actually paid fines are ones that just came in and paid a fine.
That's correct. The only ones that have paid fines, to my knowledge, are the ones that just came in and paid
fines.
Yeah, that's right. And did not contest it.
And that's really disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I like that sliding scale on repetitive visits to the same site. That's the real crux of the matter. There's no sense
in getting out of a motion.
You're not taking action. If there's a consensus to think on it, get some additional resources, and come back to it, no motion is required.
I'd really like to thank you for coming back out. We've covered this in a couple of meetings, and we just haven't been spinning our wheels. So the advice and the comments and all were very much appreciated. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Can you meet me the other day and just shoot me an email or give me a call?
Okay. Well, you know, I'd just like to ask if I could. So if you were going to write this thing, what would you say from your perspective? What would you like it to say that makes it easier for you to do your job and make it a worthwhile ordinance that's going to do what it's intended to do?
I think if there's case law on the books that says a certain noise at this decibel level is dangerous and it's enforceable, we'll do what we need to do on our end to get the equipment we need to make sure it's certified yearly and to get those officers trained to use it. I think that takes the subjectiveness of the, each officer having a different opinion on what that is out of the equation.
And let me clarify, I'm not sure if you're talking about, are you talking about case law in terms of what they're going to put on, or are you talking about...
Well, I'm talking about...
The standards that were developed scientifically and not necessarily through case law.
Yeah, I know the standard was developed scientifically, but I'm talking about...
There are many cases where they've looked at decibel levels and, you know, that no one has to, can't have a decibel level. In fact, the court has looked at it the opposite way. Can you do it without one?
I just don't see how you can. That'd be like him standing on the highway going, well, that guy's going too fast, and that guy's not going too fast. And then you go to court, and well, I was standing there, and I thought he was going too fast. Well, what? Okay, did you clock?
What's too fast?
No. Well, then what's too fast?
And I think he really has a problem when he has two officers, and one says it's too fast,
exactly.
And one says it's not too fast. Obviously, at that point, you don't have a ability to beyond reasonable doubt.
Thank you.
Do you all have any other additions? No.
I guess just let me know what further you need from me.
Okay. I will.
And if you're making drastic changes to it, you know, you might want to let me see.
Oh, yeah. You will see it before the Board of Commissioners do. So.
We will definitely be in touch. On this one.
Well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you. I'm not sure I was helping, but.
You were.
You don't have to leave. You don't want to.
We just want to come up with something that's fair.
Right.
And something that's right.
Right.
And something that's enforceable.
Yeah, it's enforceable, fair. Right.
Yeah. All right.
Moving on to the watershed ordinance.
So the watershed ordinance will have a public hearing on the 25th. So at the county commissioner meeting on Monday, the meeting will begin with a public hearing on the watershed ordinance. So put that on your calendars. Come if you can. This is the ordinance that you all recommended be sent to the county commissioners back in January. And so they received it, and they are holding a public hearing as required.
Did you say it's first on the agenda?
The public hearing is usually first, yes. And so it is first on the agenda, so you don't have to spend all night there.
You don't anticipate any concerns? I mean, the commissioners will agree with what we sent up to them?
They have not heard the public input. The ordinance still needs to be sent to the environmental management. The EMC Commission, the Environmental Management Commission, to ensure that there are not changes that they require. You all used the model ordinance when you drafted it, and you used the information that the EMC approved back in 1997. So I don't anticipate anything, but who knows?
But we used the revised map that you came up with.
That was the same map from 1997.
Okay.
So the map that you all looked at was the map that was considered in 1997. So it, the map did not change from what is currently the water supply watershed today. The map was updated to be pretty.
And it had something to do with the well, a nice map always looks good, but it had something to do with the federal land also.
Exactly. And that was addressed in the comments from the EMC back in 1997, that if the watershed boundary coincided with the boundary of public land, then it did not have to be included in the water supply watershed protection map because we don't have jurisdiction over federal land. But there, and the two other water supply watersheds in Transylvania County, based on surveys and staff investigation, are completely in federal land. But we may be hearing from the EMC about that.
Moving on to the county bicycle plan.
Back in January, the planning board received a presentation about the Transylvania County bicycle plan. And this, because the modified agenda now includes that. You're right. So this, in January, the public comments had not been included in the plan, and NCDOT's comments had not been included in the plan. Okay, you were able to print it off? Okay. Therefore, the plan that you all received in January was a rough draft. Therefore, you did not make a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners. Since our meeting in January, the North Carolina Department of Transportation has reviewed the plan and provided comments to the plan. You all received those comments. That was the document that I emailed out with the modified agenda, was the NCDOT comments. The NCDOT has reviewed the updated plan and said that their comments have been addressed. So the plan that is in your hands right now and on our website has addressed North Carolina Department of Transportation Bicycle and Pedestrian Division's comments. Because we received a grant from the North Carolina Department of Transportation Bicycle and Pedestrian Division, they were administering the grant. They were working on with the contractor and administering the grant program. So their comments are to ensure that it meets their regulations and their requirements, because they have a set requirement for bicycle plans, and this plan does, according to them. What I also sent out to you all was an email from Steve Williams, who is the planning engineer for Division 14. Do you all want a hard copy of it?
Yes, please.
So, since coming to Transylvania County, I have been working with the Transportation Advisory Committee on road projects and prioritization of road projects in Transylvania County. And anytime there is a bicycle or a pedestrian project, I hear a number thrown out that is that the NCDOT will cover 80% of the match. That is because the road projects that have been taken on in Transylvania County since I've been here have been in the city of Brevard. And based on their population, when you have an adopted plan, like the city of Brevard has a bicycle and pedestrian plan that they have adopted, and when that plan involves infrastructure that is developed using the NCDOT funding mechanism, NCDOT will cover 80% of the cost because of the population of Brevard. Because Transylvania County's population is higher than the city of Brevard's, we're about 34,000, NCDOT will cover the cost of 70% of the bicycle pedestrian facility. So the local match for a multi-use trail would be 30% of the cost of building that trail. If the infrastructure that is being suggested in the plan is a dedicated bicycle lane to provide 5 feet of room for the bicycles, NCDOT will just include that with the road improvement if the community chooses at the time that the road is being designed for improvement. They will include the 5 foot bicycle lanes on either side.
But there's still the match.
No.
Oh.
There is a match if the local community wants to increase that to 10 feet. If the local community wants the bicycle lane to be 10 feet wide instead of 5 feet, then yes, there will be a match. But if it's a priority corridor for bicycle infrastructure on a bicycle route for a dedicated bicycle lane, it's included in the cost of the NCDOT project. Based on Steve Williams' email, the first sentence up at the top. So the whole reason, well, one of the reasons that Transylvania County went after a grant to have a bicycle plan was to allow future road improvement projects to include bicycle infrastructure if the community chose to include bicycle infrastructure at that time. Without a plan, there's nothing for NCDOT to lean on to say this road needs dedicated bicycle lanes. So Wilson Road was included in the transportation improvement plan to be upgraded. The design for Wilson Road came to the community before the Transylvania County had a bicycle plan. There is a traffic count on Wilson Road that shows bicycles use it on a regular basis. But Wilson Road, the design, none of them had bicycle lanes in the design because it wasn't in a plan. It wasn't in the comprehensive transportation plan, and it wasn't in a standalone bicycle plan. Therefore, Wilson Road, the design for it, includes 4 foot paved shoulders.
And that can't be changed.
We've asked. It's too far along the process. The designs have been approved by the community through the public input process. To increase the width of the shoulders to be dedicated bicycle lanes would require 2 extra feet of pavement, which would require additional right-of-way.
I don't want to do that.
Based on where it is in the process, I don't know that they can.
What does that mean, and they can't do the Wilson Road area?
So Wilson Road, as it moves forward, is being designed for 4 foot paved shoulders, or has been designed for 4 foot paved shoulders, and is being is going through the process for that. Tonight, I have these documents on the computer. On the computer, we can show them on the TV. Do you want to go through the plan like you would an ordinance? Or do you want to have a discussion and consider a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners?
I don't feel like I'm ready to do that right now.
Okay.
Unless there are portions of it that, you know, I think we really need to see.
Okay.
Was it public or heard?
So you would like to see the public comments and the draft plan? Section by section. Okay. We can
well,
start.
Not so much all the public input, just the end result. Like
the end result. Okay.
Yeah, and it just seems like shared use paths and not on the road, but separated on the road. Rocky colors damage.
What is the process for approving this plan? I would assume it comes to us, the transportation committee.
So the Parks and Rec Commission considered it on Tuesday. They, like you, are mentioned in the plan as potential partners for plan implementation. The plan was supposed to be a comprehensive bicycle plan, and there was no mountain biking facilities mentioned in the draft plan that came out in January. And so there were people that highlighted that fact, and so the plan was modified to include a section for in the program section, because it would be a program where the Parks and Rec Commission consider beginning bicycle infrastructure when parks are updated. So that is an example of something that the Parks and Rec Commission needed to be aware of. Their Parks and Rec Master Plan also highlights the need for additional greenways and linear parks. Well, a shared use path or a side path or a greenway or a shared use path spine, as is in here, is something that would support their Parks and Rec Master Plan. So they considered the plan on Tuesday and made a recommendation for the county commissioners to approve it.
It doesn't also go to the county transportation?
The Transportation Advisory Committee will be meeting April 9th and will likely consider it. They, like the planning board, received a presentation in January prior to it being finalized by NCDOT. And so there was a concern of what's going to change. You can't make a recommendation based on something that completely changes. And so today you have a plan that the contractor has modified to include what was heard during the public input and to include what NCDOT said.
So this is the Bible now, huh?
No, it has not been adopted. So it is a draft.
I understand. But this right now, if we were to approve it, the Transportation Committee approves it, then it does become recommended to the county.
Right. It would be recommended to the county commissioners to approve if all three boards recommend approving it. So the first chapter is the vision. Or it is the background for the plan. And page 4 has the plan vision that Transylvania County will have an interconnected network of paved paths, bike lanes, and other bicycle infrastructure that will provide greater safety, health, connectivity, and alternative transportation routes between communities and destinations in Transylvania County and throughout the region. the goals that are identified are to increase the safety by addressing the safety and level of comfort of the transportation system for bicyclists and motorists, reducing the number of bicycle crashes, injuries, and fatalities over time. Enhance health by providing transportation options and recreational opportunities that promote an active lifestyle. Enhance connectivity, create a well-connected network of bicycle-friendly streets and paths as part of a diverse network of transportation options in Transylvania County. Increase livability through alternative transportation so that all modes of transportation to improve the overall quality of life in Transylvania County is accommodated. Positively impact economic health by recognizing the economic benefits of a bicycle-friendly community and capitalizing on the return on investments for bikeways and greenways. Promoting equity by creating a network of bike routes that allow all county residents to access parks and activity centers by biking. And protecting the environment by promoting access to natural resources through strategic implementation of future shared use paths. During the very first stakeholder meeting, the stakeholders went around the room saying what they wanted to see through the development of a bicycle plan. And first and foremost was the increase in safety. So there are a lot of plans that the contractor looked at, and a lot of data that the contractor looked at in developing this. First or second stakeholder meeting, the first stakeholder meeting, the contractor pointed out the sources of data that he was aware of, that Alta Planning was aware of, and asked the stakeholders if there was any other data, any other plans that are out there that needed to be considered when developing this plan. Those were included in the appendix. Originally, there was a table that had all of the plans that were looked at, and it added a lot of bulk to the plan. And so the contractor moved it, still used the data, and portrayed it in a map here in the plan, but did not use space by showing all of the plans and what they recommended. I don't really want to go page by page and read it to you. So how... So the first step of developing the plan was data collection and analysis. Part of that was getting public input. So public input was received in June and July, asking the public what would they like to see included in the plan. Nothing has been put on the ground yet. There's no paths that are identified. If you could see anything in a bicycle plan for Transylvania County, what would it be? And so using the data collection, what are the roads that cyclists are using? What are the mountain biking routes that mountain bikers are using? There's this thing called the Strava heat map So they using GPS units, or I don't know what they use, but cyclists track where they go. And there's this whole stack of data that you can see the roads that they're using. Well, obviously, the roads that are heavily used by cyclists would be beneficial to have biking lanes on them to allow for that extra room for passing the cyclists. Mountain biking trails that cyclists or mountain bikers are using heavily, how can we connect those? Would it be a multi-use path to get from the center of the community out to these trails? Would it be bike lanes? Or would it be larger parking lots next to the trails? So that is some of the data that was collected before there was any draft bicycle network. The stakeholders reviewed the public input in September. The Board of Commissioners reviewed the public input in October. And then a draft bicycle network was crafted using all of that information. And the stakeholders reviewed the draft plan and recommended changes. Then the public reviewed the draft plan and recommended changes. Now you guys are seeing it again. Again, the vision statement and the goals, same as what you saw previously, highlighting the value of bikeable communities for the economy and safety and health. Highlighting the equity piece, the cost of operating a bike per year versus the average cost of operating a car, and the need to connect different communities with multimodal transportation options to increase that equity. Evaluating the economic impact of shared use paths. This local study that came out in March of 2018 showed that for every dollar of trail construction, there was $1.72 annually from added to the supported for local businesses through business revenue, sales tax, and benefits related to health and transportation.
Do we know what kind of economic things the money was spent on?
There was a survey that is part of this research that is available on ITRE's website. They asked, did you use this path? They stationed themselves on the Brevard bike path at a couple of different locations and asked, are you going shopping? Are you going to go for recreation? Are you going out to eat? Did you buy anything to use this path? What was the investment that you made that allowed you to be here today? Did you buy shoes if you're running on the path? Did you buy a bicycle if you're riding a bicycle? Did you buy special bags to go on your bicycle to allow you to go to the store? So different economic impacts were evaluated by ITRE to determine what the economic return is on the trail construction.
Says that our 5 mile ringway generates about $1.5 million annually.
that
that can't be 100% cash, though.
No.
It's for example, the health benefits is a value, but it's not an economic concern to the community.
No.
It's a value, but...
Individual.
Yeah.
Commuting rates and reducing vehicle miles traveled was looked at. And the environmental benefits of reducing carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions. Are there any questions about the background input? Okay. So the existing conditions. Some of the data, you know, the traffic counters that you see put up there, they can capture whether it's a vehicle or a bicycle or a pedestrian. So Railroad Avenue near McLean Road, 4.5% of the traffic are bicycles at that location. 5% of the traffic on Park Drive near Park Avenue is bicycles. Park Avenue near Park View Drive, 2%. It was a little bit less than that on Wilson Road. There's more vehicles on Wilson Road. I think it was like 1.7% or somewhere in the ones for vehicle miles traveled.
And this Park View and Park Avenue and all are in the city, right?
They are. Exactly.
Well, actually, all three of those are in the city.
They are.
So, a question. So, the Wilson Road thing, it says on page 27, key recommendations, keep momentum on bicycle projects that are already in development. That's not a bicycle project, but was that 4 foot was put in there as a bicycle consideration originally, the 4 foot paved shoulder?
No. But it will benefit bicycling. And through the public input, there are areas where there's concern about adding the extra foot to make a designated bicycle lane. And so there are areas of the county where paved shoulders may be all that are able to be built based on community input. Wilson Road, that is all that could be built because we didn't have an adopted plan. And because it adds that extra room that can be used by cyclists as well as RVs, and because it is in the process of being developed and will make it safer for all users, it is highlighted here.
Okay.
You're right that it's not a dedicated bicycle infrastructure piece.
But Wilson Road had some physical constraints as far as the floodplain, the edge of the river, and the field slopes on the mountain.
Yes, very much so.
So has the width of the lanes changed for the cars? Is it the same? And they somehow added 4 feet to each side?
A 4 foot paved shoulder is the white line, and then 4 foot of pavement outside of the white line.
It's going to be added.
Added.
The width of the river.
Yeah.
Both ways.
Okay.
That
will
help.
It will. Even if it's not a dedicated bicycle lane, it will help. But it is also following NCDOT's guidelines for modernizing roads. So their guidelines for modernizing roads with a certain amount of traffic require 11 or 12 foot lanes and 4 foot shoulders, and Wilson is included in that.
speed limit unless I don't even use it.
A couple of points on that. In Jackson County on Highway 107 south, just south of Coley, they're improving it, kind of like Wilson Road.
Mm-hmm.
And the big difference is Jackson County elected to do the major improvement on that one.
Cool.
On 107.
Wow.
Like, you know, there was three levels of improvement, and the county picked the middle level. And that may have affected why they won't go back and change. But on 107, they actually went back, even after they bought right-of-way, and bought more right-of-way, and they condemned like four businesses to build a new bridge for two new bridges for bicycle lanes.
I wonder if that was funded as a separate project, a bicycle pedestrian project.
No, it was all under.
It was all one.
It was all
okay.
Under the construction. One construction project.
What was that second?
107.
So there might be an opportunity. I have not heard that in any of the discussions I've been involved with regarding Wilson Road. It seems pretty set, but there might be an opportunity, especially if all the property owners put up signs saying, we want dedicated bicycle lanes. Do you all have any specific questions about any of the maps that are in this existing conditions section?
Going, is it not a conceivable notion that in this county, since we're dealing with Transylvania County, that there are just some roads that should not be used for bicycle traffic? I mean, some that are so narrow that the distance between the white line and the guard rail is 18 inches.
And then there's a drop off, you mean?
Yeah, straight off.
There's certain roads that are really popular. Are you talking about like 276 South?
276 South has some awfully dangerous places.
I know.
They do. It does. Bicycles, by law, have a right to use the roads. So, and that's state.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them are going to be a challenge if they do it. Even just putting in a breakdown lane, I mean, just...
I wonder the same thing, though. There's a lot of roads that are really steep, and bicycles move super slow, and, I mean, you come around the curve, and there's two bicycles in the road doing 3 miles an hour, and you're doing 35.
Especially if you're on an 18-wheeler or a triaxle dump truck, and you come around there, what are you going to do?
It's a wonder we don't have a lot of that.
That is why you'll notice in the program section, chapter 3, that there is a recommendation to research design for bike pull-offs and to look into that further. Intermittent paved shoulders are not currently allowed by NCDOT policy. So they can't have a pull-off for bikes that is narrower than a pull-off for a car. But if there was guidance on safety and engineering specifications, then policies can change. But there's, so page 44, bicycle facilities on steep hills. Further study is needed. So, because it is not policy to allow bicycle passing lanes on these narrow roads like 215 or 276 or 178, instead we're recommending that further study be done. So maybe Transylvania County works with Greenville County in South Carolina and Jackson County to get a federal highway grant to study this. Or maybe we work with ITRI to see if there's a way to study this. Because that is what we heard a lot, that we need the ability to pass cyclists safely.
Because safety is the number one issue anyway.
Yeah. So that is a programmatic recommendation in the plan.
You know, Joy, can you imagine an EMS ambulance responding to a call coming around a curve and a water bicycle in the road?
They wouldn't have to go to the other call, would they?
They'd have to stop and handle that call
right there. Yeah.
Yep.
Fortunately, the bicycle crashes don't have a lot of data for there being crashes on 276 or 215. Most of them are down along 64. There's one on Wilson Road here, Walnut Hollow, Country Club Road. So this is the bicycle crash data. Now, this data is dependent on how it's put in by the person investigating it. So a bicycle accident, where a bicycle has an accident, is not going to be put in as a bicycle crash where the accident was involving a car.
The crashes in that map involved cars, or they didn't involve cars?
Most likely they involve cars. If you go to NCDOT's website, you'll notice they have them going based on fatalities, based on injuries, based on involvement with cars. There's a lot of good data there that shows, but talking with state troopers, talking with police officers, the data doesn't always show every bicycle crash that involves a car. It depends on the wording, how it gets processed by the state. And so it's likely that there's more crashes than this that involve cars, but based on the data we have, this is what we have. Yeah. During the public input meetings in June and July, when asked for open-ended responses about what your thoughts are, what your priorities are, 67 responses were supportive of multi-use paths, 43 supportive of road improvements, 22 supportive of education and communication. Distribution of cyclists more evenly throughout the county was a concern for 8. Connectivity was a concern for 12. There were 17 outliers where there was one person that said a specific thing that didn't fit into any grouping.
I'm not clear on what outlier means here.
There was a gentleman that wanted the Acusta rail line to be used by these modified bicycles that run on the rail line. He was the one person that said that. And then there was someone else who maybe they said something about driver's ed. Although that would be education. 17 one-of-a-kind comments was an outlier.
Okay.
That didn't fit into a bucket.
Okay.
There are different types of bicycle infrastructure. There are shared lanes, which is what we have currently. Because we don't have bicycle infrastructure outside of the city of Brevard. There's paved shoulders. There's a dedicated bicycle lane. There's a buffered bicycle lane where there's 18 inches to 2 feet of space between the bicycle lane and the cars. A lot of the, well, some of the comments that we saw in January were, why don't you have buffered bicycle lanes? That is what people are going to in Spain to make it more safe. The bicycle infrastructure that's highlighted in the plan is relatively non-specific to allow what meets a certain road to be put in there based on the terrain of the road, based on the connections that it would have. You're not going to put a separated bicycle lane in if you're coming into two roads that have no paved shoulders. That would be a weird transition. You know, so how can we have a fluid system that serves the needs of all users? Separated bicycle lane has more space and barriers between the bicycle lane and the traffic. A shared use path, also known as a side path, is adjacent to a road. So that is if we installed a multi-use path along US 64 between Rosman and Brevard. That would be a side path. Whereas if we put a greenway not adjacent to a road, that would be a greenway. So then we have the recommendations. You guys want to see some yawning? Push on to 9. The key recommendations: keep the momentum on bicycle projects that are already in development. Strategically and proactively fund and build the priority network. Use the comprehensive network of recommendations to build other projects incrementally over time. Implement new programs and policies that support and encourage bicycling. So projects in development include the bike ped bridge over Davidson River, the intersection of 280, 64, and 276, Pisgah Forest intersection, the improvement of 276 up to Avery Creek Road, the Davidson River connector, Wilson Road, Asheville Highway access management, Caldwell Street. Those are those that have been funded through the State Transportation Improvement Program. So they're in development. And then there's the priority network. Shared use path spines. Transylvania County Brevard interface. Priority bike routes, existing bike paths, and protected lands are all on this map. The green are the shared use path spines. The yellow are the priority routes that are highly used by cyclists that have high traffic volumes as well, that are the priorities because of the high traffic volumes and usage and the potential for conflict between users. The Brevard-Transylvania County interface are those areas like connecting the Gallimore Road path to Hap Simpson Park. That goes outside of the city of Brevard's jurisdiction for a section of it. It goes into the ETJ. And so how can we work in partnership to connect that? Some of the others are, they're in Brevard, but they go towards the ETJ or create a link with a partner. One of the things that we heard from the stakeholders is that instead of using A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, that the infrastructure, the shared use tax fines, are identified using symbols. Because based on funding, based on momentum, these trails are going to be funded in different ways. What builds a trail in Lake Toxaway may not be the same thing that builds a trail on the Coosta Rail Trail. And so who knows which one is going to be built first? Priority 3 may be built before Priority 1, and it will be dependent on funding and community support. So the shared use tax fines are identified here. Acosta, NC280, 64 between Rosman and Brevard, the Lake Toxaway Trail, the Cedar Mountain Trail. Then there's the Brevard Transylvania County Interface, Old Hendersonville Highway, Brevard College Multi-Use Trail, the Neely Road, Parkview Road, the Greenville Highway, the Country Club, and Music Camp. And then there's the priority bicycle routes. The priorities are shown in green because of the high traffic, high use. The others are still bicycle routes identified in the Ride Transylvania map that the Tourism Development Authority created. But due to the low traffic volumes, there's less need to have dedicated bicycle lanes. A paved shoulder may be adequate for some other, maybe improving sight lines around curves, some other treatment.
What's AADT? Average annual daily trips. Average annual daily trips, okay.
We do have a trail or a bike route, a state bike route that traverses Transylvania County. It's North Carolina Southern Highland Bike Route, North Carolina Route 8. So it is a dedicated or it is an identified bike route by NCDOT. The Hellbender Regional Trail is something that the Land and Sky Regional Council is beginning discussions about. Is it something that the region would support?
Are any of these the mountain to sea trails that we're looking at here?
They are not.
Okay.
The Mountains to Sea Trail borders Transylvania County along the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Okay.
At one time, it's my understanding that it came down close to the intersection of 280-64, but the Mountains to Sea Trail has been modified through the years, depending on what trails are built and what is available. And so the Mountains to Sea Trail in Transylvania County is up near the parkway. So in addition to infrastructure, there's programs, bicycle facility maintenance. So if there is a dedicated bicycle lane, let's ensure that there's sweeping so that cyclists can use it safely. If there's greenways, let's ensure that there's a greenway maintenance plan in place prior to building the trail to ensure that the trail is maintained. Transylvania County is currently a Watch For Me partner. It creates a partnership with NCDOT and Transylvania County to increase awareness for cyclists and pedestrians, but it can be greatly increased. The education, the impact can be increased with more volunteers, with more time spent on it. And more education, expanding it to include safe routes to schools and Strive Not to Drive and Vision Zero. Those are all initiatives that try to increase safety between motorists and cyclists and pedestrians. When the draft bicycle plan went out in January for public comment, this was not a programmatic recommendation. But we heard that while the Watch For Me campaign is fine, we need something specific that can educate both cyclists and motorists in an open forum manner, so that concerns can from both sides can be shared. And so with a mediator, moderator, having a panel discussion or an open forum to help to increase awareness and education on both sides.
There's an awful lot of not obeying signs, some signal. As we get more into summer months, there are a number of bikes riding the farm roads without any lights or very small lights.
Yes.
That's the problem.
There's concerns on both sides, yes. And so having a forum and a space to share that so that both sides can hear it is something that was recommended by the public.
It's almost, I would call it uncommon to see a bicycle stop at a stop sign out on the park roads. Maybe on the city road, yes, but not if you get out like Plowman Ford or Holland Holler or something. Then.
But they're not very heavily traveled, though, right?
Say that again.
They're not heavily traveled.
You'd be surprised.
Capitalizing on the bicycle events that take place to try to get more of it. Kinsey mentioned this in January. How can we increase cyclists staying here and spending more money? That does take accommodations, but
We don't have any accommodations.
So how can we capitalize on it in our community? Mountain biking infrastructure was added after the public input in January. And then a voluntary funding program was also added after public input in January. So those two programs are new from what you saw in January. The voluntary funding program, we heard a lot that community members wanted a tag, a license. That is moving forward in North Carolina through North Carolina general legislation. But locally, there is an option to have a voluntary program where cyclists can donate to future bicycle infrastructure. So working with local bike shops, working with local bike clubs, how can we start a little nest egg that's voluntary? In addition to whatever the North Carolina general legislation does, what can we do locally?
So is it up to the state of North Carolina if there's going to be a license?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Because that seems like it might, depending on what they're going to use with the money, discourage. I don't know, it's just...
But then there's a concern if there if we have residents here that get a license, how do we get that money back? Or does it just go into the general fund for North Carolina?
Well, of course it will.
And so does it do what
we know
the,
that's
what does the does it do what the community wants?
Joy?
Yes.
You know, it's interesting here that there's two types of biking that they're talking about here. Mountain biking and riding on the roads is two different kind of bikes.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
And then the beginning bikers that would use the shared use paths or the side paths. So there's three types of cyclists. There's the kids and families. Mm-hmm. There's the avid cyclists that will ride on any roads. Mm-hmm. And those that are getting almost to be avid cyclists that will ride on a lot of roads, and then the mountain bikers. And they require different infrastructure. Yeah.
But they're making it sound like connecting areas of high mountain bike activity with these trails. In other words, you'd be riding mountain bike style bicycles on road bike type trails to connect the two. And
some cyclists or some mountain bikers may do that, but not many. But maybe promoting Rich Mountain instead of 276. Because Rich Mountain is chip and seal and gravel in certain places, so a road cyclist couldn't use it. But a mountain biker could, if they could get to Rich Mountain, they could use that to get to DuPont.
And would they ride to there on the regular trail to get to the mountain trail? Or I don't know. I'm not a biker, I don't know. But
do we have mountain bikers in the audience?
That's one of the bigger questions to me is, if you spend all this money building bike trails, are they going to be used, or bike lanes especially? I mean, again, like 107 and there at Coakley at Western Carolina University, 10 years ago they put bike lanes in, spent $4 or $5 million, and I go through there 3 or 4 times a week at least, and for over 10 years I've seen bicycles only twice.
Well, they saw you coming.
But I mean, you know, if you spend the money and build the lanes and they don't get used, that hasn't helped anything.
During the stakeholder meetings, we heard that they really need to be maintained.
But say like on Wilson Road, if they go back and build 5-foot bike lanes, does that mean bicycles have to stay out of the roadway? I mean, if there's a bicycle lane, is it legal for bicycles to still ride in the road? Can there still be a group of 40 in a big convoy out doing 3 miles an hour? I mean, I read this study from front to back and read all the comments in the appendix, and it's obvious if you look at the stakeholders who developed this plan that it's all bikers, by bikers, and for bikers. And the general public really doesn't get much out of this plan. I mean, the big complaint that you saw in the whole plan was these huge groups of bikers on the road. Something has to be done about that. I mean, in our business, I've got one of our permits where we moved a piece of equipment this week, and it says that if two or more loads originate from the same place, they have to be at least 2 miles apart, that you can't travel in a group. You know, but then here you have 40 bicycles. You have, when I was going down the old Hendersonville Highway a while back, and a guy holds his hand out and stops me, and 40 bikes get out in front of me, and I follow him for a couple of miles. I mean, it's just pretty spectacular.
That wasn't a race. That was just.
I have my family with me, or somebody that got hurt.
And you know, it's hard to understand, but it may happen from, you know, from the Swamp Rabbit Trail studies and all that. I just have to be convinced that it's going to generate all that income.
I don't see it either.
Oh, I do. I mean, every one of them that they've done has. And you can't, I mean, you just can't dispute that. And I don't know, and, you know, I'm, my feeling is, and I'm not for or against, or I don't care either way, but I think it might be a little bit more likely to be used. If you build it, they'll come, probably more so here than over on 107, just because of the nature.
Well, I mean, it's at Western Carolina University. Everybody over there has got a bike strapped to their car. But nobody rides.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm not against bikes, but I'm against people being rude, you know, and inconsiderate of others. We all share the road. And some people are trying to make a living out on the road, and some are just out on the road for enjoyment. There needs to be some mutual respect that goes both ways.
Even if you're out there to enjoy it, and you hit a bicyclist, whatever, and or you get involved in something like that, then the enjoyment's gone. All that. So, this is not too many of our roads really aren't friendly to the simultaneous use of cars and bikes. They're not. Particularly the farm roads where there's a lot of bicycling going on. They're more narrow than the state highways. I'm not sure what the standard is. I suspect it's about 9 foot lanes, but I'm not clear on that. That's two cars meeting sometimes. Well, they were close. There's meeting one of your trucks.
When we did the comprehensive plan for the county, we looked at DOT funding. We're in Division 14. It's the least funded division in the state. By population, lane miles, any way you want to slice it. Transylvania County is the least funded county in the least funded division in the state. And somewhere here I have a pie chart. The next 10 years of DOT funding is going to be 0.8% bicycle. And it just really, it fundamentally bothers me that we're here spending all this time bicycle lanes, but we don't even have decent roads. We don't get our fair share of funding. And it's just hard for me to understand.
The only thing I grant is that if we have the plan, then the state will hopefully provide the service. I don't know what they're going to do.
And that would include the shared use paths that are off the highway.
That are adjacent. Not the greenways.
No.
The greenways,
not the greenways.
The greenways that are
but if they're adjacent,
in my backyard, not near a road, it would not be funded through NCDOT.
Okay.
But if it was in
Following a road,
yes.
Last time the DOT came to the county commissioners and talked, a project that they're working on right now is turning 280 into a three-lane road. There's been so many accidents that are happening now to put in a center turn lane. And here we are talking about putting a bike line on 280. And we need a road. First, a bike lane would be great, but we need a road. We need the basics.
In the draft transportation improvement plan, NC 280 is in the planning pot of money. It's not in the construction pot of money. So looking at the feasibility and what would NC 280 need to look like based on today's traffic and future traffic projections.
But as it is, this is what the commissioners are going to talk about next meeting.
No. You guys are considering a recommendation for the county commissioners. Then the Transportation Advisory Committee will consider a recommendation for the county commissioners. And then they will likely see it second week of April or in May.
So they want recommendations from the Transportation Advisory Committee and us.
Yeah, and the Parks and Rec Commission, which made a recommendation Tuesday.
And we wanted to get get started.
Is it 1.8%? I'm sorry, 0.8. Okay. How are
you doing? This is the bulk of the meeting tonight. So we can take a break if you need to use the restroom and come back to it to look at the policies and the implementation, or we can continue on.
And then the a small area plan, that's not going to take much.
No. I mean, I can give you that update right now, if you'd like it.
Oh, no, let's not confuse. I'm confused enough.
Hate to be an beginner, but I would like to back. We're spending a lot of time on this, and there'll be a lot of money spent on it at some point. And
the
third, I can show you a lot of roads that we need to spend money on.
The third paragraph that Steve Williams shared in his email was that adopting a bike plan does not obligate the county in any way, financially or otherwise. It is a planning document and allows for a vision of projects as they are prioritized for funding. If a roadway is included in the state transportation improvement plan that is identified in a plan as needing bike facilities, the county and municipality is still not obligated to share in the cost. The upside to participation is that if a facility is in a proposed typical cross-section of a road, the cost share is the percent of materials and grading, construction, etc. are 100% paid by NCDOT. If a county or municipality decided to add bike ped facilities later, and if that bike ped project was included in the STIP, the cost share would be the percent of the entire project. So if it's done when the road is being improved, it saves an enormous amount of money with right-of-way and construction costs. And the local match would be the construction, like the physical materials. And not the whole project cost. Oh yeah, it would still be expensive. So, policy considerations. NCDOT has a complete streets policy so that when roads are improved, all modes of transportation is supposed to be considered. So bus stops, bike lanes, sidewalks. However, it stops when you get to the municipal boundary. So the city limits of Brevard is where NCDOT then just recommends paved shoulders, unless there is an adopted plan that shows a priority for bicycle infrastructure. So there are a couple of resources that provide guidance for when roadways should have additional design for bicycles. So the Small Town and Rural Multimodal Network Guide has some guidance for when a separated bike lane should be installed based on traffic numbers and speed limit. When a shared road symbol should be used. So traffic volumes that are low with a speed limit of 35 or less, share the road signs is what's recommended. Whereas if it's 55 mile an hour speed limit, there's separation for safety. Support bike accommodations by roadway type. During future amendments of the subdivision ordinance, consider requiring dedication, reservation, or development of greenways with new development, redevelopment, and roadway projects for subdivisions with over 10 lots. So, if an adopted plan proposes a connection between two, so say the Cedar Mountain plant, the trail, connecting Cedar Mountain to Conestee Falls Park. If a subdivision was proposed there and the subdivision ordinance was updated, the planning board at that time could consider whether or not infrastructure within the subdivision would connect to the proposed multi-use path. That might be a non-segue if there's sidewalks. It's a policy recommendation. Consider it when the subdivision ordinance is updated. Require new bike lanes, greenways, etc. to connect to existing facilities when located along a priority project. So it doesn't start and stop. Adopt traffic calming programs, policies, and standards in the areas of the county where the community has identified this as a need. The vision document that Toxaway, Historic Toxaway created, identifies traffic calming. How can we slow down the traffic on 64 so that the community is more visible? It's especially important when bike routes or bike boulevards are proposed on local residential or sub-collector streets.
What exactly does that entail? Is that just speed limits or speed bumps? Or
when it's a U.S. highway, it may not entail much because NCDOT has to meet federal guidelines for U.S. highways. For Parkview Road, where people are speeding through because it's a connector, it might include a bump out where the side or where the crosswalk currently is. How can you have a bump out to have safe parking for the bike while they're waiting to cross? That bump out in the road would slow traffic down because they would have to go slower because the lane narrows. So there's different infrastructure that you can use on streets to slow down traffic.
We just use potholes here, right?
Consider limiting dead-end streets or cul-de-sacs when revising the subdivision ordinance. In other areas of North Carolina, that's important when there's a lot of development taking place and you need to connect one subdivision with another to encourage walking and biking between those.
Now, Joy, what about developments and all that where people, you know, where they don't want that connectivity? They want a development that's, you know, away from all that. What happens to those folks?
And that's why the planning board would hash it out when they update the subdivision ordinance. Maybe it's nothing happens, but you all would consider it at that time. Doesn't make sense in our rural mountainous county to have dead-end streets and cul-de-sacs, or would it make sense to have a right-of-way that would connect to other subdivisions, like Sherwood Forest and Conesty. What if there was a right-of-way that would allow a connection at some point? Would that be something that would be beneficial? That would be for the planning board to consider when the subdivision ordinance is being updated.
But you're just talking roadways here, not bypass, right?
Yeah, roadways. And that's why the policy is just to consider it. Implementation. It takes the whole county to implement this plan. It takes partnerships. It takes the county commissioners. It takes the planning board. It takes the NCDOT. It takes volunteers, like we have in the audience. But the first is adopt the plan. And it's highlighted that it does not obligate the county financially, but signals an intent to support the vision, goals, and projects in the coming years. Then form a county bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee to focus on bicycle and pedestrian resources. Update county policy. Begin work on priority projects. So it might be rails or trails or parks and open space or incidental improvements during a roadway reconstruction. Engage in programs and research. Look into those bicycle pull-offs. Continue building partnerships. Using county, municipal partners, Land of Sky, rural planning organization, NCDOT, projects are leveraged from multiple funding sources, including federal funding, the NCDOT budget, grants. The appendix has a whole list of grants that are available to be used for bicycle infrastructure. The County Board of Commissioners, City and Town Councils, you're here, the role of the Planning Board. This has not changed since January, when you saw it in January. Consider the policy recommendations when the subdivision ordinance is updated or when master plans are reviewed. And learn about the policies. The role of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee is to meet with county and municipal staff and evaluate progress of the plan's implementation. It's to assist county staff in applying for grants and organizing bicycle-related events and educational activities. This is a new one. This is a new piece. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee was recommended by the public in January. It was not here in January when you saw it last. Build upon the current levels of local support for bicycle issues and advocate for local project funding. So that those are citizens that are either an official advisory committee appointed by the county commissioners or a volunteer group. Parks and Recreation Commission. NCDOT, they have a big role with the way that infrastructure is funded currently. A lot of the funding will come from NCDOT, which means it will be a long time before this is implemented, unless there's private or grants that are received. The Sheriff's Office, we heard a lot that there needs to be more enforcement of cyclists and bike laws and motorists and motor, the laws regulating motorists. Developers, consider voluntary installation of bike infrastructure. And then reasonable. Role of volunteers. Formalize maintenance agreements, such as adopt a trail or adopt a greenway. And then monitoring and evaluating. The facility development method gets into some of the transportation improvement planning. Bridges, when they're constructed along a priority route, they need to be a little bit wider to allow for the bicycles to have safe access across the bridge. It would also help with those people, visitors who are not familiar with the road. The bridge over the French Broad on Green Road, a couple people have gone off of it recently. If it was a little bit wider and more visible, it would help.
Yeah.
Residential and commercial development, local roadway construction, easements. We do not own water and sewer infrastructure. Some of the comments in January talked about using utility easements. That would require a partnership with PNC Natural Gas or Duke Energy to use those easements as potential trail routes. Often it's when the local jurisdiction owns the water and sewer easements, they're turned into trails. So working with the private entities is not common in North Carolina, and that's why it's not identified as a local priority or a priority project, but it is an option to consider.
There's not been an awful lot said about using power line rights of way and the gas. See, the gas company right away that went to DuPont goes all the way through, almost completely through DuPont State Forest to the old plant site. I know where it's stubbed off, but it's never been talked about. It's never been talked about using Duke Energy's right of way that carried the power lines all the way to the DuPont Forest. It seems like all the emphasis is on roads.
And some of that is because it's an easement, so Duke doesn't own it. So how do you work with Duke and the landowner, and what is the legality of that? Because, yeah, it's their easement.
It depends on how the easement is written.
It is. It does. And so Duke Energy...
Most of the easements do not.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the easements in Florida did not provide for external users, other than we had a joint use agreement with the phone companies, so they used our right of way and whatnot. But for anybody else, it generally was a no. Now, that's not always true,
right.
But in most cases, we were reluctant for a number of reasons. First of all, having the easements in somebody's backyard and you'll let other people use it. Liability concerns.
Yeah.
All in all.
So Duke Energy has looked at allowing the Mountains to See Trail to cross their property, but that's different than crossing their easement because they own the property that they would allow the Mountains to See Trail to cross.
And crossing is different than running the lawn. Whatnot, which is what we're talking about.
Right.
Whatnot.
So.
Typically, like a gas line easement, the gas company would buy an easement just to install the gas line, and that's really the only right they have, just putting it in the main line of the gas line.
Generally, you can't
have the right to do anything else.
And so you can't sublet the easements. That's what that would be doing to somebody else. Generally, you can't do that.
And so we'll end up one day, or this board one day will end up dealing with that rails to trails issue to Henderson County on the old rail bed.
They got the same problem.
Yep.
depends on how the easements were written. Some of our easements were written that if we abandoned the line, the property immediately reverted to the adjacent family.
On page 51, which was the previous page on this, it says the role of the planning board. Now this is pole vaulting again, but it says we should become familiar with the recommendations, but it says we should support its implementation.
That would be with your recommendation to the Board of Commissioners to consider adopting it. That would be your supporting implementation. That would be when you review the subdivision ordinance. Do you support the policy? If you want to reword that, tell me.
I'd just like to have to see the word and consider support for its implementation. Because some of the things they may be wanting on here is members of this board may not be able to support.
So, and consider support for its implementation?
I'd like to hear what some of the others think about it, but I mean, that just automatically almost says that we're going to support its implementation. If what they're wanting recommendations on isn't right, it's going to be hard to support it. And it gives us the leeway there.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no choice.
And it will be hard for me to support that when you look at things like considering limiting dead end streets and cul-de-sacs, and forcing people putting in developments to build sections of a greenway, and things like that would be hard for me to support. Yes.
Well, I would support considering it. I mean, it's something you should probably think about. That doesn't mean you have to do it necessarily.
The way it's argued in here.
Not boxed into a corner,
yeah.
But the ability to consider it, yeah.
But the way it's worded now, it's kind of like if we endorse it, we're pretty much saying we'll go along with it. And that's kind of an implied endorsement. And I like the wording that you had. It changes that.
Consider supporting its implementation?
I see our role is looking in each individual situation based on its own merit and not just automatically rubber stamping something. But it's just like we've done since I've been privileged to be a member of the board, to see us study a situation and come up with a logical outcome. So that was the last page.
Thank you for going through that.
Yeah. Do you all have a recommendation for the Board of Commissioners?
Personally, I would like for us to consider it and then come back at the next meeting. But I feel sure, having gone through it tonight, we can come up with something for next meeting.
I guess it's a foregone conclusion
that Transylvania County's moving in this, I mean, moving in this direction. This is going to be income into the county in lieu of all of the industrial income that we'll never have because big industry's never going to be here again. I mean, this is what we're going to do. This is where the county's income is going to come from, as I see it. Is that a fair assessment?
If I had a crystal ball, I'd be rich. I don't know. Based on what we have been seeing over the last few years, probably.
But you know, Mac made a good point. You know, when we have roads that need repair, that DOT can only afford to macadamize instead of pave, that ought to send a signal. I mean, they do the best they can, but I guess this is coming. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when the National Bike magazines tout Transylvania County as the number one place in the Southeast for mountain biking, I don't know, say something. And it does.
I always get back to what does it do for us economically? I have trouble buying into that it's a major economic provider in the county. Maybe it is, I don't know. Like I said before, like the salt on the Carolinas is coming up. Mm-hmm. There'll be 1,500 people in that race. 1,480 of them will stay in Asheville or Hendersonville because there's no place here. They're very limited.
And you know,
so what's the economic impact of that, other than the fact that the road club gets a lot of money that they use in the community? I'm not sure. I don't even know whether they stopped the fast food restaurants. I think I said once before, I was going to Asheville one time, that thing was over, and it was over. And there was numerous cars with the bikes on them going to Asheville.
But that's just, if you look at the overall, there's seven goals of this whole plan, and only one of those is economic impact. There's safety, health, connectivity, equity, protect the environment. More people ride bikes, use less gas, and put less, I mean, and yeah, that's a consideration, but that's only one of seven.
But a lot of the selling is done on the economics part of it.
Yeah.
And I have trouble buying into that. I don't know how, I don't know what you can do to prove that one way or the other.
This is true.
How many of those 1,500 riders, and some of them bring their families.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they bring their families, they're even at a more disadvantage for staying here in Vermont. Because there just aren't that many places.
Yeah, there's a finite number of rooms that we talked about some meetings ago. You know, there's only so many places to stay in the county.
Right. And so they go somewhere else.
Is that Elder building?
There has to be some impact. I agree with that. What it is and whether it is substantial or not, I don't know.
Yeah, that to me, it's a hard economic sale. 20 years ago, this county had the fourth highest average weekly wage in the state out of 100 counties. We lost our three biggest manufacturers, and we went, I say this at the commissioners meet the other night, I said, we just like Babo Sweeney, we went all in on ecotourism, outdoor recreation, and we've done that for 20 years. And we've done about as good a job at that as Babo has coaching football.
This is true.
Well, DuPont State Forest, to me, is the most miserable place to be on the planet. And you go to Pisgah Forest, there's not 5 seconds of solitude in a two-day stay. And
the season.
But there's nothing.
I mean, we sold all that stuff, and we really couldn't have done any better. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not. And then you look at today, we're 56 than ever.
We should have gone whole hog on the place in that industry.
Less than half. At T.C. Henderson Elementary School, 85% of the parents can't afford to pay $2 a day for their kids' lunch. Out of 130 kids, 19 pay full price for lunch. And I mean, I know that this kind of economic development is an important part of the county, but it's just not going to carry water for the whole county. You can't pack enough people in the forest. You can't put enough bikes on the road. I mean, it's important, but there has to be a mix and a balance of other things, too. And that's, to me, we just kind of lost the focus on everything else because this is green, it's hip. It's exciting, it's easy, everybody can get behind it. A lot of the other stuff that needs to be pushed is boring, and you know, some of it's ugly and dirty, but you have to have some thought, and that's kind of like my concerns about the DOT funding. To me, we're working too hard to go after the 0.8% of bike funding when we're leaving the 99.2% funding. We're showing up last every day.
And you know, and I know hindsight's always 20/20. But I remember talking with commissioners years ago when I was still with NRCS when they were talking about, and they used the example, Highway 280, all of that, when they graded the highway and made it wider and made those beautiful fields out there, and the realtors were saying, why can't we develop those? You can't put a septic system in fill soil.
That's right. There ain't no infrastructure.
And so instead of spending the money for county infrastructure, it got spent for everything else, and now we have nothing to show for it.
Well, then all those fields are, it was the unsuitable soil from the road job. So it's not.
So that's
not even just the septic, it's that it's going to be really expensive to build on.
You see, Joy, that's where, when we're making planning recommendations and all that, I mean, just in this past week, 2 weeks worth of newspaper articles, the mean median income in this county. Teachers can't afford, I mean, we're losing so many people right and left, they just cannot afford to live here.
You know, school enrollment is down. I'm not sure how much it dropped, but last year it was only 3,470 total students in our school system in this county. This year it's less because people left.
Well, I guess we got a little bit sidetracked, but these are all the concerns I think that are going to come out when people start really asking questions about this. And I can't say that I mean, I agree 100% with Mike. I mean, I'm sure there's income off of this, but how much? Well, incrementally, the way the county's going now, we're getting little bits and pieces of income from various assorted activities in the county, but that will never, ever equal what we had when we lost our mills in 2002.
And I grew up here. Coosta made this county. Before that, you could log, you could farm, you could run moonshine, you could go hungry. My family did all four. And there were a lot of families that did that.
It was surviving, is what it was.
Coosta came and all that changed. And that's the value of that, of some kind of industry in this county. And it, I can't believe we can't attract, with all the good things we have, that we can't attract some well-paying jobs into this county. I just don't understand what's being done that we can't do that.
The excuses I've heard thrown out are distance infrastructure or lack thereof, distance and transportation from interstates and so forth. But the industries that were here had to come here because of the pristine environment. But where are those industries anymore?
And there was no infrastructure when they came. Coosta built their infrastructure. Coosta changed the course of the Davidson River. Not many people understand that, but they did.
Yeah.
they built a new river.
And nobody worried about the environment back then either.
They invited the hostess and called them to run out of town.
Well, you know, it was amazing when you say that, that when people needed jobs, money talked.
And people needed jobs. And they still do. I drove by the Sapphire Community Center, and the Manna Food Bank was there. The parking lot was full. People were parked out the road. Okay. I mean, it's just disheartening. It didn't used to be that way. It's just hard to see. And that, I mean, I know I've been really frustrated talking about this bike plan, and that's why, to me, is, I mean, here we are talking about a bike plan, and it's important. But to me, there's just 50 other things that are more important.
But you know,
every meeting we talk about this is a meeting we're driving down the wrong road.
Right. But the commissioners are going to, they're expecting something from us eventually, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We move on to small area planning.
We're going to review this.
Joy, I know some of the things we said aren't helping you any, but you do a good job.
All right.
Appreciate what you do.
The small area plan, 7 applications were received by the county for the Cedar Mountain Small Area Plan Committee. I have had a request from Dunn's Rock to have a presentation about what the small area planning process would be. They would like a presentation during their normally scheduled monthly meeting. It coincides with planning board. So I have a question for you all about the potential for modifying the date of April's meeting. So that Dunn's Rock can hear what the small area planning process is.
Normally it would be the 18th.
Because you're going to go to them, is that it?
If you guys are amenable to modifying the date, yes.
Well, which day would you like to go to?
Preferably the week before.
Which is the 11th.
The 11th.
That works for me.
Works for me.
I don't have my calendar, so I don't know, so okay. We'll make it work.
Okay.
So is everybody in agreement?
Let me just throw this out for the heck of it. Would it be feasible to ask them to come here and maybe open that up and advertise that we're going to talk about the small community stuff and open that up to any other communities that might be interested in hearing that? We could do it once for more than one group.
We're going to have to do the bike plan.
Well, they should have to sit through that.
Unless you all want to make a recommendation for the bike plan tonight and not spend more time on it.
And I mean, I don't care, but I mean, if you're going to do that anyway, it's the same time, maybe leave.
The concern is the meeting communities where they're at can increase the participation of the community. And so requiring them to come here, we might get 3 people versus going there, we might get 20.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm just going around.
Yeah, I think you ought to go there then.
So you're just going to give them a program like we originally did out of Cedar Mountain?
Exactly. With the addition of the small area planning process that the county commissioners approved in December. Yes. And so that is the update.
Okay. They've been interested for a while. I read that somewhere.
Well, you saw them in December. members of the Duns Rock community came. That is all I have with small area plan update.
Now, the commissioners, when are they going to appoint those people?
That's a good question. I don't know whether they're going to re-advertise to get more applications or whether they'll appoint those or whether they'll select a few from those. I'm not sure what they will choose to do.
Was there a minimum number that was supposed to be?
There is not.
And you said you say go there. Are you talking about us going or you going?
Me going as staff. But to do that, I need to have you guys okay with modifying the April meeting date.
If we move the meeting up a week, will that help with having our recommendation on the bike plan for the commissioners?
Yes. It would help with that as well.
We need a motion?
That would be helpful.
Okay, so moved.
Second.
Oh, and changing the date?
Changing the date to April 11th.
Okay.
That be here, or is that the whole meeting going to go here?
So April 11th would be a meeting here for the planning board. April 18th, staff would attend the Duns Rock Community Center potluck to present a presentation on the small area planning process.
All in favor?
So did the rest of you feel like we need to go, you know, address specifics in here next time we meet? Okay.
I think it would be good to have, I mean, if that's not going to mess up the commissioner's timeline and all, I think it would be good to just digest it for 3 weeks and come back.
Well, after tonight's, I think we went through it pretty well. I don't envision the next meeting being as long.
It shouldn't take very long.
Okay.
Planning and community update.
I have a new program assistant, Beth Webb. Hey boy, I got initiated tonight.
You got to wonder about this now, didn't you?
Be careful what you ask for.
Planning board, or the planning director interviews begin next week, and so they are interviewing to fill the director position.
Are they going to interview all, or did they come up with a final three or something?
I'm not sure. I don't think they can tell me.
You'll notice it.
So, the last year, a couple of you went to the quasi-judicial board training, or that may have been 2 years ago.
2 years.
The, 2 years ago, the quasi-judicial board training from the School of Government. They are coming to Asheville again this year, May 15th, if you all are interested. I brought three flyers, so if you're really interested and you want more information, there is a $60 fee that the county will cover as planning board members. So if you want to go, let me know.
Is
it a
duplication?
Yes.
I just got through going through that for the Soil and Water Board.
Okay.
So that would probably count for you. Mm-hmm.
This is not a requirement. This is just an option for you all to consider.
I mean, it was interesting. It's very interesting.
And I don't have any other large updates to provide at this time.
Next is public comments. Anyone who wants to speak?
I apologize for what 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 I
Well, we got a chance to talk. I came to talk about this, but this kind of stuff is pretty exciting to me. I listened to the last meeting, so I wanted to be up to speed as to what was discussed and kind of where everything was going. It seemed like things kind of went along the same lines today, with a lot of talk about the safety issues and concerns about bicycles being in the way, and talks about the economic impact of doubt about the economic impact, and same things mentioned about, oh, it does have an economic impact, and it seems like the same conversation twice. But it seemed to me that like, if safety is the concern and bicycles in the way is the concern, this seems like an answer to that. The industries aren't coming back as much as we would like them to. They're just not. But I've been to towns where they've done tourism, and tourism has worked and made the town grow. I mean, you go to, like, we just had the Banff Film Festival here. Banff itself is, like, a huge town. Well, it's not a huge town, actually, but it's a huge destination town. A lot of people go there, and they spend their money there. There's Bozeman, Montana is a town that has just grown a whole bunch, and it's because there's a lot of tourism and people coming in because Bozeman, Montana is this beautiful place. And Bozeman, Montana also has a college, and it also is very bike-friendly. And
it has a lot of ski areas out there, too.
Mm-hmm. And so it plays really well. This kind of stuff works to our strengths, and the strengths that we have right now is that we've got the forest. We've got this kind of small-town atmosphere, but we've also got the college, and we've got just an area that other places don't have, and the music center, too. And so building this bike infrastructure, it supports that. And I definitely want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you state your name?
Oh, James Brooks.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'd like to make a comment. As a New Brevard citizen, I'm here tonight. I am a county employee. I'm the solid waste director. But I'm here tonight because I'm for a
That's why I'm here.
We didn't grow up in this area. I mean, we grew up in some part of the state. We actually grew up in Virginia, near Greensboro. But we saw this as a place to retire, and we, had an opportunity for me to relocate and take a job. I'll tell you an interesting place to meet the people that are moving to this community. And it's at the collection centers, it's at the landfill, and it's there. Those are people, they're looking for the services that the county provides. And almost to the person that is moving to this area or acquiring vacation homes, which is the ones that I met today at the landfill, as a new customer, so I'm explaining the process. But to the reason why they come here is for the natural beauty and the trails, the hiking as well as biking, and again, the job, I would concur, they're not going to return. I was in the private sector for 36 years and relocated, took her all over the world. She actually went to New Jersey with me. We came back, and now we're here. So, this was the promise that this would be the last time we moved. I made that one before, I think, but there are reasons why people are coming here for that, and the people that I have met, locals as well as people that are from other places like myself, it is because of that beauty, and that, I guess, is that economy driver. And yes, I would agree. I don't currently bike. I own a bike. We own two bikes, but we don't bike. Does that make sense? So we hopefully will bike. I'll fix them again, I promise, Ben. But that's, I guess, our goal with one of the things to get back to a healthier lifestyle as we get to our retirement communities. That's my goal. Do you need my name, Ben?
Got it.
You know Ben?
I'm not sure.
She just thought it may not be the last time he moves, but it's the last time she moves.
I may just got it right.
I guess I would like to make one comment, and all the and first of all, thanks for all of your time and planning, and obviously lots of time tonight, so I'll be quick. But I have also been frustrated at the rudeness sometimes of bicyclists on the road. Like, for an example, I will give you is you going out Everett Road or something, road mark, hit by a cyclist. And you finally get by them and you come to a stoplight and you're waiting and they may pull out right in front of you or something. But I will also say that, and I don't know, it's kind of like trying to judge the economy of it. It's hard to judge the economy. It can be hard to judge the percentage of it, but I would say it's fairly close because, and the percentage of what I'm getting at is, I think all of us would be foolish to say that every motorist out there is polite and follows every rule. So just because there are some rude cyclists out there, you know, that do things, I don't want to see that spoil our opportunities to make things safer and better for them, because just yesterday, I saw almost a horrific car wreck because a person was texting and drove right through a red light that had been red for a while, you know, and I just, I mean, and I saw that and was like, I mean, it's across the board.
Thank you. Next, board member comments.
Well, I disagree with both of you. Jobs could come back here if we put a concentrated effort into it. It doesn't have to be smokestack industries to have some well-paying jobs. People who have well-paying jobs like the outdoors and the beauty too. As I said earlier, I grew up here. As a result of Coosa and whatnot, I was able to go to college and get a degree. Thing. I never smoked, never used their product, but nevertheless, they were here and they made the county, and I think we could have some industry. I sat through I've been here when the contractor, who I can't remember now, came and made recommendations about our economic and how to approach it and whatnot, and then it got into a committee that was not too interested in that, and it kind of got sidetracked. Public participation was limited in that committee, and I know because I sat in those chairs and went through it. And I think the problem is we don't have a well-coordinated approach to attracting some industrial-type jobs, well-paid jobs here, as we do to the recreational infrastructure that's here, no question about it. We can have both. We had both with Acusta and DuPont. True, Acusta stumped at times, no question about that. It was a paper mill, and it did stink, and no question about that. And yes, they did some not good environmental things that they wouldn't be allowed to do today. But we can have both, in my opinion. I think we ought to try for that. I'm disappointed that there hadn't been more activity on bringing some larger firms back here. So I'm not opposed to bicycles. I do get upset sometimes with it. And as you say, there's some movements in it. If the motors weren't as nice as we are, I think there'd be a lot more. Problem. Sometimes it's very difficult. And I only wave at them occasionally, you know.
I seem to recall at a county commissioner meeting not too long ago, the fellow that heads Helen, the Alliance for Economic Development. Yeah. He mentioned that wasn't out of the question, bringing manufacturing back. But it's talking, you know, we don't have the infrastructure. That's true. We can get that.
I think you're going to have an uphill battle trying to do that. I think it's going toward more of the recreational stuff. And if we do get the good paying jobs here, they're going to be green jobs. They're going to be environmental infrastructure jobs, which are not a bad thing, necessarily. But
tonight was a good example, again, of the board really looking at an ordinance or in this case, a bicycle plan, trying to come up with what's best overall for Orleans County. That's what makes being on the board here so enjoyable, because it's not nothing that gets rubber stamped here that I've ever seen. It gets studied. And what's best for the majority of the people, what's best for the county, and I just really appreciate that. That's top of the line. And, I'm a little amazed when we're sitting on the absolute headwaters of the third oldest river in the world, with some of the most pristine water that can be found in anywhere in Western North Carolina, that we can't have bottled water, or even, breweries in this county. Those are pretty good paying jobs. But the thing about it is, look at how they overwhelmed the city of LaBarge waste treatment plant.
That's all worked out.
Well, that was because it wasn't
designed for it.
It wasn't designed correctly. Right.
And this is a big blessing. There was an opportunity to get at least two, if not three, industries at the old DuPont plant before that plant was torn down. And they were all mixed. And those would have been some unbelievable jobs out there. But that's water over the bridge, or under the bridge. So, but anyway, tonight was good. Enjoy, you did a good job.
No question about that.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say, everybody's frustrated about manufacturing jobs, but actually, since the economic collapse was formed, we hired Charles Holland. I think employment overall is up about 15% in the county, like the number of jobs. The manufacturing jobs are up 180-something%. He really aligns within, like, most of what they do when I'm on the board is just tied up in confidentiality agreements, and you can't talk about it. But within 6 months of hiring Josh, there basically wasn't a building in the county that talked about it. He had things leased up. People moved in. They're building this state building. Things are improving, and kind of what you said, Kenzie, is, there has to be balance. There's not enough just manufacturing. There's not enough just this outdoor tourism. There has to be a balance. A county that runs like a one-trick pony doesn't run well at all, because things will change. Through what I said tonight, you don't think I'm against bicycles or anything like that. I just get frustrated that we spend so much time on bicycles. There's a whole lot of this county, a whole lot of people in this county that are not helped by bicycles in this way.
There's a lot of needs in this county.
Where do we stand? Jordan, you might know also, why is the Renova or Davidson River project not moving forward? That's been what, 12? Well, I know we looked at the property, and Artie and I talked about that property back before I retired in 2012. So it's been at least that many years or more. Why is nothing happening down there?
Well, it's a big flat piece of property, but it has a lot of legacy issues, environmental concerns, potential liability, brownfield agreements.
Is there ever going to be usable?
Well, the brownfield agreements were developed for mixed use development. Kind of like a little more part.
Yeah.
So they don't really fit well with
industrial manufacturing uses. It's a really, really complicated site. Someday something will happen down there, but it's just not. It looks great when you drive by and look at it, but when you really get into the weeds, it's just going to take a very good business. It's going to be a tough sale.
And likewise, you know, several years ago, there was supposed to be talk about, once again, the Brevard bypass. I don't think in the rest of my life you'll ever see a bypass around Brevard. I just don't think it's going to happen. Do you join?
That was supposed to be addressed through four road projects. One is Wilson Road. One is Caldwell Street, Broad Street couplet, and one is the West Loop. And then I don't remember what the fourth one was.
Yeah, the West Loop was one that went through the, okay.
But there's a question at the Transportation Advisory Committee meeting in September or October. There was a question of, is that still needed? That was based on vehicle miles traveled during shift change when there was manufacturing. It was based on information from the 1990s. Has that changed? Or is that still needed with the traffic that we see in the summer? And so more information is required.
And do you have an update on the cell tower? I wonder if they started construction.
They don't have a permit yet to start construction.
They don't have one?
They better not.
I mean, did they ever get their NEPA?
No.
So is it taking more time than is expected?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. I'll entertain a motion to
adjourn. A second.
Somebody has to make it.
I'm sorry. Motion to adjourn.
And I'll make it. All in favor, stand up.
Freshman anesthesia.
I don't know.
I dread trying to do something.